boys are stupid.
Seriously.
Wrong. Wrong. Wrong.
Seriously.
Are they wrong?
I think they're wrong 100%. Sometimes they're wrong. Sometimes they're wrong.
Seriously.
They're always wrong.
That is absolute
wrong.
Seriously?
It's so wrong. Wrong. Very nice words, but happens to be wrong. Wrong. Wrong.
Seriously.
Wrong. Wrong. Wrong.
Wrong.
Wrong.
Wrong. Wrong.
Wrong.
Wrong.
Wrong. Wrong. Wrong.
Wrong.
We have one more question.
Seriously.
Seriously.
Wrong.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Seriously Wrong podcast. We are your hosts, Sean and Aaron, the Wrong Boys, and we want to give a very special thank you at the top of our show to our biggest secret donor. And I know you like your privacy, sir, but we just want to thank you for all your support over the years. Of course, I'm talking about the billionaire investor, Peter Thiel, the libertarian right-wing investor. And I hope you like all of the secret right-wing messages we've been putting in the show over the years in exchange for your many millions, sir. And I wish you the best in surveilling the planet on behalf of governments and corporations in the future.
I know you want to stay in the shadows, but it didn't feel it was right to not give you your due, to not say thank you. You've given us so much. The $13 million house in San Francisco to record the podcast.
The opposition research you gave us on people who left a bad review on iTunes so we could track them down and terrorize them through various sock accounts and so on. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding, guys. We've never been in contact with the billionaire Peter Thiel, nor received any money from him, although it
is... Unlike some podcasts, we've never had a meeting with Peter Thiel.
Yeah, no, I mean, it is a rumor that, what's it called, the Thiel Foundation?
Yeah.
Has put money into, by their accounts, some weird things, including, like, it's often... Peter Thiel definitely is heavily influential in internet culture and discourses and debates. He puts money into this, and he's aware of this field, I think, is true. For people who don't know who Peter Thiel is,
you're going to find out.
He's a notoriously spiteful and vindictive tech billionaire who is both obsessed with privacy, in particular his own privacy, and he runs, I believe, the largest surveillance company in the world, Palantir, which is named after the bad guy from Lord of the Rings' magical orb, which he uses to surveil and terrorize the protagonists. Yeah, and Palantir has $100 million contracts with different governments. A lot of it is actually secret, what specific contracts he has with what groups. I think I remember reading that Palantir has under 200 clients, but above 100 clients, and their governments and corporations, and they can do mass data analysis. And then he also invests in, like, facial recognition tech and
yeah, Clearview AI is a facial recognition software company that he was an early investor in. It's like a massive database of people's faces that they scraped from the internet, from Facebook specifically, but also from dozens of other websites that they've brought together to this software that makes it really easy. It even has an app for you to, like, just put up a picture of someone's face and then it will scan their entire database and try to match it to somebody for you. And yeah, it has been used by hundreds of police agencies in the United States, including a bunch of federal agencies like the FBI, DEA, ICE. Then also like NYPD, Chicago PD, Miami PD used it during the George Floyd protests specifically. There's like 30 in Canada too for a while, although it's now banned. The RCMP was using it, our federal police. But also schools and businesses have accounts with Clearview AI. Various universities in America, even a few high schools in America have done searches with Clearview AI, and a bunch of big companies like Kohl's, Walmart, Macy's, Best Buy. They've also had a bunch of lawsuits against them. Like I said, they're banned in Canada at this point, and they've been ordered to stop collecting data on all Canadians. And there was recently a ruling that I think it's being appealed, but in a class action lawsuit against Clearview that might result in, you know, people getting $20 or whatever if it was found that your face was in their database in the USA. So yeah, he's really into surveilling people, which is a weird thing for like someone who like claims to be a libertarian. I mean, he's a tech billionaire, right? So like, yeah, surveilling people makes perfect sense. It's like exactly what you'd expect. But I don't know, most tech billionaires are like, oh, I'm a centrist, liberal, kind of enlightened. He's always been a bit of a contrarian with that, kind of leaning right. He's been like a lifelong libertarian. He started a right-wing newspaper when he was at Stanford that still runs to this day and that he recruits people from for his various companies. And like, yeah, claiming to be someone who really cares about civil liberties and privacy and all these things. And yet, at the same time,
he's one of those authoritarian libertarian, right-wing libertarians, you know, like he uses the rhetoric of libertarianism to talk about the freedom that he wants for himself and his business. Palantir's tools are used by ICE in the United States for tracking down people who don't belong in the country, according to their authoritarian. That's not a libertarian perspective. There's no way to say, oh, this is my libertarian border enforcement regime software that I'm selling to the United States government. Now, look, I say this with no love to right-wing libertarians in general, but at the very least, some right-wing libertarians could genuinely be called right-wing libertarians, but Peter Thiel cannot be called. The Palantir technology is, I just read something recently that Palantir technology is being used by Israel to do targeted drone strikes in occupied Gaza during this genocide. So Palantir technology was used to target aid trucks in Gaza. That's not a libertarian thing to do. There's no argument that that's libertarian. So like he's written an articles like, oh, why I'm a libertarian or whatever, or like I lean more libertarian. But that's just like a socially and culturally acceptable way to say I am a far right billionaire.
Yeah, I think he believes in some libertarian things, like probably low taxes on billionaires, low regulations on billionaires, various ways of getting out of billionaires' ways. But yeah, like if you listen to some like real right-wing libertarians, some like out-of-the-way podcasters who really believe in that kind of stuff, they're not going to be supporting Palantir. Like Palantir is so wild. It was an early investor in Palantir was actually the CIA's venture capital branch called InQtel. They invested. They were an early investor in it. They saw the promise of Palantir.
Saw the promise of the evil magical orb from Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, to bring that into reality. Thiel claims the mission of Palantir is to reduce terrorism while preserving civil liberties. So, you know, his rhetoric is like, I'm really into civil liberties. But then, like, you look at the Snowden leaks about the NSA, talking about there's this program within the NSA called X Keyscore, which this is a quote from, I think, a Intercept article, collected communications, not only including emails, chats, web browsing traffic, but also pictures, documents, voice calls, webcam photos, web searches, advertising analytics traffic, social media traffic, botnet traffic, logged keystrokes, computer network exploitation targeting, intercepted username and password pairs, file uploads to online services, Skype sessions, and more. And what Palantir did for the NSA in regards to X Keyscore is to create software, develop it specifically for them to help take these masses of data and help make it searchable, presentable, to make sense of this mass of data and be able to actually use it to find things out about people that you're looking into.
So Palantir tech is being used by the NSA to do blanket enormous surveillance on what people's username and passwords are, what websites they visit, who their friends and family are, what porno they watch, and the whole gamut. And that's being used to produce information that can be used by the government, by Peter Thiel's libertarian civil liberties company.
Yeah, exactly. In 2008, in a presentation to members of the United Kingdom's intelligence agencies, Palantir engineers showed how their software could be used to identify Wikipedia users who belong to a fictional radical religious sect and graph their social relationships. So, looking into data of who's browsing Wikipedia, who might be sympathetic to, you know, some organization. It could be a terrorist organization. I think their fictional organization in this case was a communist organization in this presentation. And then be able to, yeah, find out, you know, all these things about them, map their social relationships, because maybe their family's involved in this terrorism too. So we gotta get all this information about people. This is how they're pitching it to the UK intelligence services in 2008. And then in 2014, ICE, you mentioned already, awarded Palantir a $41 million contract to build and maintain ICM, investigative case management software for them. That was originally claimed to not be involved in deportations, but merely give ICE agents access to information on subjects' schooling, family relationships, employment information, phone records, immigration history, foreign exchange program status, personal connections, biometric traits, criminal records, and home and work addresses. You know, so just a few things.
Oh, yeah.
But
don't mind me. Just grabbing a few things before I go.
But they were like, this is not involved in the ERO, the enforcement and removal operations of ICE, the actual deportation arm. But then leaked documents that the Intercept found disagreed with that, saying that the ERO uses ICM data to inform its civil cases and that it is mission critical to ERO. Which makes a lot of sense. Like the two parts of ICE use the same data software. Like it.
So the enormous surveillance company run by the far right billionaire who spoke at the 2016 Republican National Convention was full of shit when it said that its technology wasn't going to be used to deport people.
It's so weird too, that why they would even say that. Like, I mean, you're giving software to ICE, and part of ICE's job is to deport people. Like, it's a weird PR move. Like, why not just be like, I don't know, probably, like, it's ICE, right? Like, it's such a weird thing to try and claim. Oh, no, there's a strict separation between all this data we're collecting that ICE uses for other things other than deport, but they would never use it to help with would you even separate that out? Like, what even is this claim?
Yeah, it is interesting, like, where the lines are drawn when, you know, corps like this throw up their hands and they're like, what do you want from us? We're evil. But then in other cases, they're like, no, we're very concerned about civil liberties. And then eventually the documents come out and they're like, well, come on, we're evil, right? Like, it's not a big deal. We now go to a scenic family home in suburbia, where a mother has just received an eagerly awaited package.
Hey, Mom, it's me, your adult son. Was that the postman who was just here?
Oh, honey, I'm so excited. I just got it in the mail. Peter Thiel's sexual surveillance personality test.
Oh, wow. Peter Thiel's sexual surveillance personality test. Hey, isn't Peter Thiel that billionaire venture capitalist who mentored and financially bankrolled the candidacy of my hero, J.D. Vance?
The one and only. He also wants to completely cut taxes on the rich and also cut Social Security. He's an American hero, and this product I've been super excited for because, as you know, he's one of the founders of Palantir, which is a global surveillance system. One of the things that they actually do is pay attention to sort of what pornography people watch and things like that of a highly private nature. And without violating our civil liberties at all, they actually aggregate that information to do a personality test. So using their existing databases on us, you can apply. It's only $299, and they give you a personality test. And the personality test is in no way sexual. Step aside Myers-Briggs, step aside astrology. This is a data-backed personality test, and they find that the sexual nature of the data gets a closer cut to the real person. So I actually just found out here in this envelope, my archetype is the Viking. So that's pretty cool.
Oh, that is so you, Mom. You are totally the Viking. Wow, looking more at this pamphlet, says it looks at your internet search history, your porn preferences, even looking at the camera on your laptop to check your eye movements and when they flare open a little wider or what you're focused on the screen and the sounds you make during masturbation.
3D body scans if you're ever nude in front.
It all goes into this personality test.
That's right. And again, again, the personality test has nothing sexual to it, but the data that it's generated from is entirely specifically sexual surveillance. And actually, I paid for the family package, so here you go.
Wow. So you can open up. Oh my God, I'm so excited.
Open up the envelope. Let's find out about the real you. You can finally know yourself, thanks to Peter Thiel.
I am the mage. Oh my God, yes. I've always saw myself that way. Kind of a spellcasting badass.
I couldn't help it. I opened your dad's. He's the milkman. He's the milk. It's so him.
Yeah, oh yeah, totally.
And Peter Thiel's sexual surveillance personality test has hundreds of different personalities. So it's always razor accurate. You know, there's the carpenter, the vampire, the activist,
the chef, the circus clown, the dolphin trainer,
the carpet layer, the diamond in the rough. Each of these represents a different aspect of the human personality matrix, and I'm just so glad that Peter Thiel has seen it in his heart to share this information with us about ourselves for such a low price. It beats going to the therapist, that's for sure.
Oh, you know who's a total dolphin trainer? Meredith down the street.
Total dolphin trainer. Mm-hmm. Today's episode of Seriously Wrong is brought to you by Peter Thiel's Sexual Surveillance Personality Test. For just one one-time fee, you can truly know yourself using vast, vast amounts of surveillance data, which is stored in servers in California, about you already.
My name is Peter Thiel, and my sexual surveillance personality type is the vampire, and I approve of this message.
I read some of his writing, which, and I kind of expected Thiel to be a little bit more of like a tech doofus, like a little bit more of a
Elon Musk.
Yeah. it's funny you say tech doofus, and I don't even have to get the E out, and you're finishing my sentence. No, but reading his stuff, I was surprised that it wasn't as stupid as I thought. It was just evil. Right. So it was like fairly coherent. I mean, I didn't read a lot of it, so I don't want to speak on the whole thing, but I read a chunk of in like 2000 or 1998 when he was in university. He co-wrote a book called The Diversity Myth with
It's 95 the book came out.
95?
Yeah.
He co-wrote a book with David Sachs called The Diversity Myth, which is basically criticizing the 1990s versions of like political correctness and wokeness. And
yeah, they also co-wrote an article for the Stanford magazine the next year about affirmative action, arguing against affirmative action. And I read that. I didn't read the Diversity Myth book at all, but in the arguing against affirmative action article, they cited SAT scores differences and why it's unfair to white students and Asian students, you know, typical anti-affirmative action talking points. But the SAT score data they cite, they specifically mention comes from The Bell Curve by Charles Murray. And it's like, you could have picked any source if you were going to, but I guess it was the mid-90s maybe.
Yeah, he had a big media thing when his...
Yeah.
And also, I think it took, like, the consensus now is obviously that The Bell Curve is an explicitly racist book that uses racist sources and isn't reliable. But in the maelstrom of the mid-90s, it was like a media thing. It was featured in the news, like, oh, interesting. We're talking to a race scientist who says that different races are smarter than the other. Stay with us. And like that, it was just like part of this anti-PC wave in the early 90s. Yeah, if you a good refutation of the bell curve stuff is the YouTuber Sean has a video on the bell curve. It's really long and detailed about some of the sources that he uses. And then also Current Affairs has this article, Charles Murray is an odious person.
We also did an episode on IQ that talked about some of that stuff. I think it's relevant.
Totally.
But yeah, I was just like, it's part of that, like, yeah, far right, kind of libertarian, but really fascist leaning milieu. He was involved in it even back then. Like, I think he had just graduated Stanford at that point. And David Sachs, who's like another, I don't know if he's a billionaire, but he's at least 100 millionaire. And another like investor rich guy who was involved in PayPal early on.
Yeah, a notorious prick who cut out. There was recently some thing I read on Twitter about him cutting out founders from their companies and just having like a really bad reputation as like this COO who takes advantage of the people who do stuff and then like runs away with money.
Right.
There was like a big Twitter thing where a bunch of other Silicon Valley people were shitting on him. Another bad dude. But yeah, on in the diversity myth, the chunks that I read, there were some really dumb, really dumb points. Like, he was giving an example of a particular month at Stanford, all of the PC controversies. One of the ones he complained about is that there was a boycott against an exploitative company that had mistreated workers. And there was like a community-led boycott because there was these workers being exploited. And he characterized it as like, this is multiculturalism banning tomatoes. Because, and I know you're looking at me slightly confused how that would follow. And I mean, that's a good, that's a reasonable facial reaction.
Was this the only tomato company in the world at the time or something? And they were like...
I think he's being dishonest about whether multiculturalism banned tomatoes. But yeah, you know, it's like, yeah, this weird... You get this a lot in like the racist community. Which is like, there's this kind of tangential, non sequitur, associative logic that's like, oh, the exploited people were Mexican migrants and people decided to do an economic boycott of the company exploiting them. So then it follows that the mythological idea of multiculturalism, which is taking over our society, has hypnotized these activists into forbidding me from eating the tomatoes I want because it makes me racist to eat them. So like there's this weird paranoid non sequitur connection thing going on there.
Right.
So when I say that his book wasn't dumb, sorry, I feel like I may have accidentally implied his book is not dumb because I said that he didn't come off as dumb as I was expecting.
Right.
But it is still extremely dumb.
Yeah, you can argue for dumb ideas in a smart way or a dumb way.
Yeah, I think I was just kind of anticipating it to be more of like a pop right book, like a Steven Crowder or Ben Shapiro type vibe reading it.
Right.
And it wasn't quite that, but there was some outrageously dumb comments.
I think he kind of fancies himself an intellectual based on some of the talks that I've tried to struggle through listening to him. I find him extremely annoying when he talks, and it's really hard to listen to. But I did listen to a little bit of it. And one of them he was talking about, this is a very recent one, so, you know, jumping ahead in time to, I think, like last year or 2 years ago. He's talking about wokeness, and he's also talking about his religious ideals and kind of like comparing and contrasting the two. And one of the things he said was that Christianity was kind of like revolutionary. He's a Christian, by the way. He claims to believe in the bodily resurrection of Jesus Christ. He says he's kind of a different Christian or a weird Christian. He doesn't identify with any particular subgroup of it, but he did specifically say he believes in the bodily resurrection. And he said that Christianity in history was kind of like a revolutionary idea because it was the first time that stories like this were being told in the Bible from the perspective of the oppressed people rather than from the perspective of the oppressor. He uses the Egyptians kicking out the Jewish people as an example. He's like, you know, typically that would be a story of like a great king having this troublesome group of people in his country and kicking them out. But the Bible reverses it and shows it from the side of the victim, which it kind of sounds like he's saying that as a good thing. But then he likens it to wokeness and is kind of saying that wokeness does that too, but takes it too far, in that Christianity is all about forgiveness, but wokeness never forgives anyone. So like, I guess it's okay to take the side of the victim as long as you don't do it too much and as long as you always are like very forgiving to the people, to the oppressors. And you never like, oh, you billionaires, you did something really bad, but we forgive you. So I don't know. It was pretty muddled. I had trouble like trying to make sense of what he was saying. It felt to me like he was trying to square a circle in his own brain where he has this Christianity that he's accepted for a really long time, but also this lifelong obsession with political correctness, now called wokeness, that he's against. And this point about them both being about the oppressor is something I've also heard Jordan Peterson say. So in my mind, I feel like some point in the last few years, he heard Jordan Peterson say that, and he was like, oh, how do I square this circle? How do I make these two things work together? And he landed on this idea of forgiveness as like the thing that's different between them. But yeah, I don't know. Like, I feel like he does try to, yeah, be more of like an intellectual and like really think through these things. Like, he's referencing Carl Schmitt and like René Giraud and like all these thinkers when he's making all these points. I feel like he speaks in a way on these topics that's very different from, yeah, like an Elon Musk. It's like he's like very philosophy bro-esque.
Yeah, and I just want to push back Peter Thiel against the idea that the woke never forgive, just because one of the things that left-wing people are sometimes criticized for, even more than, I think left-wing people probably don't even do this as much as they should, but it's still criticized, is that left-wing people are often criticized for being too forgiving in the sense of like punitive justice versus restorative justice, and the idea that there's like systemic causes for things that people do, like when they mistreat each other or if people steal. Like, the quote unquote woke perspective is to look at what is motivating someone to steal and like separating out people who are stealing because their family is hungry versus someone who's stealing because they want to get a quick thrill or whatever. Like, when he says that wokeness never forgives, he means that if you are racist in public, then you can't get a guarantee. There's no time limit where no one's going to bring it up again.
Yeah, yeah. Especially if you're racist in public and it's pretty clear you still hold those beliefs. And the like, one example that always comes to mind when people say that is this Ben Shapiro quote from like, I think over a decade now, where he tweeted this horrible thing about, yeah,
Palestinians liking mud and rocks or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then people will be like, oh, it was so long ago, why don't you forgive this? Because he clearly believes it. He never said that, he never disavowed it in any meaningful way. Like, if Ben Shapiro had had a full turnaround and was like, I'm anti-racist now, and like demonstrated a real understanding of anti-racism and started advocating for it on his show, I'm not saying every woke person would forgive him, but I think there would be a lot of forgiveness to be had. People would be delighted if Ben Shapiro started acting in a way worthy of forgiveness. I would be happy about
that. Sometimes people are too quick to forgive on this kind of stuff too, I think. Like, someone does this like kind of token gesture of like, I don't believe that anymore, and then people are like, well, he says he doesn't believe it anymore, and it's like, well, that's right. All he said, he put this out in the world. Like, he like, it's like you see that a lot with the streamer.
Yeah, what
forgive me for saying this, but Destiny.
What part of this don't you believe anymore? What's, yeah, like specifically what was wrong about it? Or because a lot of the times, yeah, people will say that, and then they'll be like, when you get in the details, they're just like, oh, I don't think they're literally love mud huts or whatever thing he said. Like, it's some like fine detail thing. He's like, yeah, maybe I was a bit hyperbolic, but I still stand by the main point. But,
yeah, that Israel is a civilized nation and they can obliterate and oppress Palestinians at will forever.
Yeah.
So yeah, and then speaking of old statements that people have not separated themselves from, Thiel says that he stands by the diversity myth, by the way. So if you're interested in understanding what his perspectives on race and racism are, the diversity myth might be a place to better understand it. I didn't have the stomach or the time to go into the details before this episode. But something he said in 2009 in his article, The Education of a Libertarian, and this is kind of a notorious quote from him. It's one of the things that like an evil billionaire would say. He said, I no longer believe that freedom and democracy are compatible. Now, the woke mobs haven't forgiven him for this, even though that was 2009, which is 15 years ago. But also, he's never said, actually, I've come to understand that democracy is valuable and is compatible with freedom. Fact, an acceleration of a more meaningful type of freedom, which is a participation in public life. He's never went in the opposite direction on that. And it would appear that that is still, I mean, you look at all the things that he's done since then, and a contempt for democracy, which is wrapped in a sense of a wounded and bitter, vindictive sense of personal freedom, is dripping from pretty much everything I've ever heard of him doing in any way.
Yeah. In that same essay, the 2009 Cato Unbound essay, he goes into a bit more detail about what he means by this, why he doesn't think freedom and democracy are aligned. And here's one quote. As a young lawyer and trader in Manhattan in the 90s, I began to understand why so many become disillusioned after college. The higher one's IQ, the more pessimistic one became about free market politics. Now, when I was reading this, I stopped, like right at that point stopped and was like, is he saying smarter people are pessimists about capitalism? That kind of seems like an anti-capitalist point. Like the IQ thing is weird, but you know, I thought he was making a good point. But then comes the finishing of that sentence. Capitalism is simply not that popular with the crowd. So what he's saying here is that you become a pessimistic, not about free market politics as if they don't work or they're the wrong thing. You become pessimistic about the future's ability to have free market politics because they're unpopular with all the low IQ masses. And he's equating capitalism with freedom. So democracy is giving a vote to all these low IQ masses who are going to vote against freedom, vote against capitalism. That's the problem with it. That's why they're in conflict. He also said, since the 1920s, vast increases in welfare beneficiaries and the extension of the franchise to women, two constituencies who are notoriously tough for libertarians, have rendered the notion of capitalist democracy into an oxymoron.
Right. So he said that by giving women the vote
and welfare beneficiaries, so basically like it should just be moneyed property owners like back in the good old days,
moneyed property owning men,
yeah,
because that way democracy could be consistent with freedom,
yeah,
but as long as you let women have a say in public affairs, they are going to consistently vote against,
they're
going to
undermine freedom. It's really rough stuff. And one final quote from the essay: the fate of our world may depend on the effort of a single person who builds or propagates the machinery of freedom that makes the world safe for capitalism. I wonder who he thinks that single person might be.
Yeah, I wonder what sort of machinery of freedom might make the world safe for capitalism. Would it surveil people's computers? Yeah.
Maybe like a Palantir, kind of like Lord of the Rings type.
Yeah, we need some sort of evil magical orb to protect capitalism from women voting.
it's a wild essay. He also talks about it in it, about finding places to escape from politics, which again is, I think, he's trying to escape from democracy. I think that's what he's saying, from escape from politics. And he proposes three avenues for this, one being cyberspace. You know, you can find freedom in cyberspace, especially in the 90s. There was this idea that it was this wide
before
open
before we started
space.
Surveilling your keystrokes and your cookies and stuff, it seemed.
I guess, like, yeah, is that him creating the freedom in cyberspace that he dreamed of as a
for him and for capitalism, maybe, but not for people?
The second one is outer space. His buddy Musk is working on that. And the third one is seasteading.
Yes, seasteading. I was going to mention this. One of Thiel's things, and this is a wider billionaire class thing, but there's kind of this political movement amongst rich people, free market people in general, that Thiel is like a supporter of and a funder of, which goes beyond seasteading. So seasteading is like setting up a country on the ocean on a boat or something where you can have your cockfighting rings and pay no taxes.
Yeah, build these floating cities on the sea where, like, he was like, if you don't like the rules in one location, you can just take a boat to another one, or like this utopian libertarian. He's donated millions of dollars to the Seasteading Institute, by the way, who in 2018, it seemed like they were about to try and build something, but then they never did. And as far as I can tell, they don't really do anything anymore. They still exist, though, so maybe eventually it'll come to pass. But
I read this book called Crack Up Capitalism, which the entire kind of like thesis of the book is that billionaires are trying to create new ways to create special zones, like special economic zones where the regular rules don't apply, that they can basically have this like international community of billionaires where you have different jurisdictions competing for your money by lowering taxes as far as possible. And seasteading is like an extension of this. But the kind of vision is like to use these zones as a transitionary route away from democracy. And like some of the examples that are given of the utopian potential of this is when they cite different economic development areas that just genuinely have no democracy at all and have no minimum wage and have no worker protections, that are just like pure zones of capitalism that are ruled by the authority of business leaders. And like, that is their dream for planet Earth. That is Peter Thiel's dream for planet Earth.
Yeah.
So more detail on that can be found in the book Crack Up Capitalism, which I enjoyed reading, and gets into all sorts of details and different directions on this. But seasteading is kind of like the most cartoonishly, you know, like futurist kind of version of it. It's like, we're going to build a big floating country and we're going to like kick it off from the shore, and then we're going to go be perfect libertarians over there, exploit our workers fully, never pay any taxes, and have rule by the elite.
Yeah, the only way to escape the statism that's devoured all the land on the planet is to move out to the sea. Yeah, it's like a bizarre.
And you might notice that this vision of human freedom isn't actually oriented around human freedom, like the freedom of workers to not be exploited, or the freedom of workers to have free time to spend with their families, pursue hobbies, pursue their interests, but rather the freedom of firms and institutions, which are controlled by powerful people, to exploit everyone else, to pollute the planet, to rip through our natural resources at a rate which is faster than can be replenished, to make money on a short-term basis. So that, not to belabor this point, but that's not fucking libertarian, is it? If you're not talking about human freedom and you're talking about institutional freedom, that's not very fucking libertarian. Unless, asterisk, you're creating a new version of authoritarianism, which uses the rhetoric of libertarianism to hide what it advocates for. And I mean, I think right-wing libertarian is often that, the freedom of firms to dominate and exploit people. But that's not really a meaningful type of human freedom, if you think about it.
Yeah, well, it's like being like, I believe in libertarianism, which to me means the freedom of kings to rule over the world. Like, I just, it's not monarchy, it's a new form of libertarianism, but it's just, it's really about the freedom of kings. It's that's kind of the same vibe. It's like,
and if we let women vote and welfare recipients vote,
oh,
they're going to vote disgusting away the freedom of our sweet king who knows best and became king because he's a genius.
Yeah, God chose him. I believe in the bodily resurrection.
So we need some sort of great man. Now, I'm just spitballing here. Some sort of great man, maybe investing in tech, maybe like a billionaire, who can understand, a philosopher king, someone who sees above it all and can put his money into making the world more free in this way, free for people like him. And maybe could use some sort of magical orb, or I don't know. I'm just spitballing. Anyways, I don't know where I'm going with this, but maybe we should do something like that someday.
We now go to somebody's utopia. Not our utopia, but Peter Thiel's utopia.
Wow, it's so great being a worker who lives in civil libertalia, the unregulated constructed island at sea for the billionaires to do their great productive work. I'm so glad to be a worker here.
Yeah, I don't know. I really liked the vision when I heard of it at first, but honestly, being here, it's not so great sometimes, but
sounds to me like you're still brainwashed by the CCP communist programming and the Democrats. Don't worry, friend. You just have to understand liberty. You know, this place is a free place of liberty. There's no undue restrictions of the freedom of the bosses by bureaucrats or even the workers themselves with collective bargaining or anything like that, or voting. There's no voting. It's great because it frees up the bosses, the economic elite, to really rule us and surveil us to make sure that we're not organizing against them. And also, it's so annoying to have to vote every couple years because, you know, it just doesn't matter anyways. And
I kind of liked voting.
Researching
myself,
policies and platforms, researching all that. It's
having a bit of say in things. It was nice to have a say in things. I kind of miss it, to be honest. There's a lot of things I miss about, you know, back on land, you know, 8-hour days. They had to pay overtime if you worked longer. They weren't allowed to whip you. That was really cool. Safety goggles and other safety gear was provided for you. You didn't have to buy it yourself on the market. And, you know, you and I both know it's pretty expensive here. They really gouge you for those safety goggles.
Well, they're really needed, so they can. And there's not a lot of competition, so that's just markets. And
yeah, there's a lot of demand, yeah.
I love the commitment to markets here. I mean, like, one of the things about you know, a lot of people, they say, oh, I signed this 20-year contract with Civil Libertalia, and they told me that my wage was going to be XYZ. And it's like, well, you didn't read the contract then, because it says it's XYZ now, but it's going to be determined by market conditions, unregulated market conditions. So obviously, in certain markets, our wages will go up. In other markets, our wages will go down. But we should never burden them to pay what the markets won't bear. So I just, it's a test. It really is a test of people's values. And some people, they do have that Democratic Chinese Communist Party stuff going on. But for us who value freedom, it's paradise. This is paradise.
I don't know. I felt more free when I had a bit more wage security myself. You know, the minimum wage, I miss that for sure. Those contracts, yes, they technically say that, but the print was so small. Like, I didn't even notice it. And, you know, now I'm just saving up, trying to, like, buy my way out of the contract and hopefully buy my way onto a boat to move to one of the other floating sea cities that hopefully will have different rules. You know, like, it's the marketplace, and if I don't like it here, I should just go somewhere else. But buying your way out of that contract is, it just doesn't feel fair. I don't feel free. Like, I get what you're saying, like, intellectually, it's free or whatever. It's
unregulated, yeah.
For the business owners.
For people who own a corporation as an extension of a person.
Yeah, and but I'm not feeling that.
To limit.
Like, I don't own it, and you don't own it.
That's right.
What kind of freedom is there for us? You know,
human, like, freedom to enter in contracts and to, you know, it's, I don't really understand your objection.
I guess I just had a lot more free time before. I was legally allowed to talk back to my boss before. There were no torture rooms for unruly employees back on the mainland. And I get the fear of the torture room helps the factory run more efficiently, but yeah. I don't know.
I mean, I do some of my best work when I'm fleeing.
Yeah.
The threat of torture.
It just does. I'm not loving it as much as I thought I would.
Well, I guess everyone has a right to their opinion, their free opinion. Excuse me one second. I've just got to make a quick phone call. Hi, yes, bosses? Yeah, we've got a suppressive person spreading anti-civil libertalia propaganda. I think he may be a CCP Democrat agent.
No, can you hang up the phone, please?
This is a private call. Can you respect my privacy?
I think you're talking about me. That's,
well, you don't know the contents of my heart, so that's presumptive of you.
Oh, God, they're going to torture me again. Okay, the only way out of here is I got to...
Yeah, so I think this person...
grab his life raft, and I'm running for the edge of the boat.
This suppressive person definitely needs torture, and they're currently fleeing towards the emergency life rafts. He's also made a slanderous accusation against me, saying that I'm reporting him, which isn't true and is a violation of my privacy rights.
And that was a scene from Someone's Utopia. Not our utopia, but Peter Thiel's utopia. So you might be wondering, how did Peter Thiel become a billionaire? What hard work did he put in? What companies did he build? What did he do to gain all this wealth?
Like, where can we find the sweat of his brow on the factory floor?
Where's the genius of Peter Thiel? and, you know, there's not a lot. Like, this is the big one. This is where he really got his start. Is he was one of three founders of PayPal, which was originally called Confinity, and was a company for developing security software for handheld devices. And then when that didn't work out, they pivoted to digital wallets and merged with X.com, Elon Musk's financial services site at the time. Right. They merged to become PayPal. And then they kicked Elon Musk out of the company and sold to eBay a few years later. And he got a few million bucks from that. And then he put $500,000 of that money into Facebook, a very, very early investor in Facebook, an angel investor, as they call it.
In this case, a devil investor.
And that investment in Facebook made him a billionaire. And then since then, he's put money into a lot of things, you know, a little seasteading institute there, few hundred million to various Republican political campaigns over the years, creating an evil Sauron orb to
a lot of Silicon Valley tech companies were invested in by Thiel at some point, stuff like Twilio and I think like Netflix and Spotify, yeah, things like that.
But yeah, the major one where he made his money from is Facebook, because he got in really early on that one.
Yeah, he's got a personal relationship with Zuckerberg, I think, of like, he's got a reputation as being someone who, I mean, he's got a reputation for being very vindictive and like revenge oriented primarily, but he's also got a reputation for nourishing up and coming tech talent.
Right.
And I'm sure filling their heads with all sorts of bizarre ideas as well in private. And he was involved in, there was a controversy around Facebook's news page not sending right-wing sources to people. And this is like when Facebook was running their own news page. So people's feeds would still share right-wing news with each other. But if you went to like the Facebook news tab at the time, it would be like New York Times, Washington Post, you know, quote-unquote credible stuff.
Right.
Like you could still share Fox with your friends and it would still show in your friends' feeds and stuff. But it became this like public controversy. And this is like 2014-ish. I don't have the dates in front of me. But there's this controversy of like conservatives are being oppressed on Facebook. And then Thiel and a bunch of right-wing media people, so like your, I can't remember if it was like Ben Shapiro in particular, Rush Limbaugh, you could look up the list, but it's like that kind of vibe, all had this meeting at Facebook with Thiel and Zuckerberg where they convinced him, following this controversy, that like the purpose of Facebook is to make sure that everyone can express themselves and always see each other's posts and stuff. And that's why Zuckerberg and Facebook had this very laissez-faire operation going into the 2016 election, where, you know, a lot of people blame misinformation on Facebook proliferating as one of the things that led to Trump being elected. So Thiel not only donated to Trump, spoke at the Republican National Convention and spoke on behalf of Trump, he also was involved in the lobbying effort to kind of like have Facebook break up their own internal regulations and guardrails against misinformation and stuff like that, because the spirit of Facebook is connecting people. So like, and Zuckerberg is a liberal. Like he's like he would have voted for Obama a third time. You know, he's a sweetheart. but he was convinced by this meeting, being surrounded by his friend and mentor in some ways, Peter Thiel, and all these right-wing people, that like the vision of connecting everyone must be unfettered and laissez-faire, which is part of the reason why you can't invite your aunt to Thanksgiving anymore. This episode of Seriously Wrong is proudly brought to you by the part in the self-made entrepreneur's life story where he's given a loan of $1 million by friends and family.
The story of Peter Thiel's life is one of hard work, perseverance, and overcoming incredible odds in order to become the titan of business that he is today. Born in Frankfurt, Germany, his family lived across the world, moving to the United States, then South Africa for a while, and then back to the United States, where they settled in California. His father was never granted citizenship, but worked hard as an engineer, allowing Peter Thiel to go to Stanford, where he studied philosophy and then law, founding a right-wing student newspaper, which he continues to fund to this day. In his early career, he moved to New York to do work as a financial lawyer, and after that, he moved into derivative trading. But that wasn't enough success for young Thiel. He needed something more. He needed to take it to the next level. And so, in 2004, in order to capitalize on the early dot-com boom, he was given $1 million from friends and family to launch Thiel Capital Management, his very own venture capital fund.
And that was the moment in the story of the self-made entrepreneur where they're given a small loan of $1 million by friends and family. Now back to our show.
Seriously Wrong is an independent, listener-supported, utopian podcast. And we rely on the generous donations of listeners like you to keep on going. So if you like the show and want to support what we do, head on over to our Patreon at patreon.com/seriouslywrong and sign on up for just $6 a month. That's all we ask is that sweet six to keep the lights on and those podcast machines chugging along.
We turn down offers from advertisers all the time because our listeners are awesome and they're generous in supporting the show, and advertising is a form of mind poison. And that Sweet Six will also get you access to our bonus episodes, the Discord server. We run a listener book club and reading group.
Yeah, and there's some great stuff there in the bonus episodes. We've got a whole series going over Jordan Peterson's 12 Rules for Life, and there's some wild stuff in that book. We have deep dives into historical topics like the Haitian Revolution, in-depth analysis and sketch world recreations of all three Atlas Shrugged movies. We have an episode going over the CIA's Simple Sabotage Manual from the Second World War that is, frankly, very illuminating. And Wrong Wars, our new comedy audio drama series.
And you also get our episodes before anyone else. Your contribution will help keep Seriously Wrong going for 1,000 episodes.
After 1,000 episodes. I don't want to make any promises, but maybe I will. Maybe I'll just
make the promise.
But if we hit 1,000 episodes, there will be 10,000 years of world peace.
That's just objectively factual. That's like talking to a doctor. Like, that's what a high level of epistemology we're dealing with.
And that's a promise. That's a guarantee. So you mentioned Peter Thiel being an extremely vindictive person, which by all accounts is very true. There's one extremely famous example of this.
And these are the words of the people closest to him, not me, but if you're listening, Peter. It's people in your camp say that.
Right. Yeah, this is from that biography you read, right?
Yeah. The Contrarian, it's called.
So Gawker magazine, some of you may remember a website called Gawker, used to exist, no longer exists. And the reason it no longer exists is because Peter Thiel decided that it should no longer exist. And because he's a billionaire, he was able to make that happen. I have here a timeline of exactly how all of this unfolded. In 2007, Gawker ran an article outing Peter Thiel as gay. It's a very short little kind of pithy article. It's just like, hey, everyone, I've heard Peter Thiel's gay. It's like two paragraphs long. Peter Thiel didn't like this. In 2009, he called Gawker's tech column terrorists and compared them to Al-Qaeda and said, everyone in Silicon Valley is scared of them. It's terrible for the Valley, which is supposed to be about people who are willing to think out loud and be different. I guess Gawker's getting in the way of that.
Is Silicon Valley about thinking out loud and being different? That's never been my impression. I thought it was about producing technology and software for profit.
Yeah, but by thinking out loud and being different, I guess. I don't know. But they're scared now because of the Al-Qaeda.
Different than people that he dislikes?
Yeah, like,
because people that he dislikes are also, like, part of the left woke sphere is, like, embracing people being different. I mean, he does that classic, like, diversity of ideas versus other types of diversity thing in his...
Yeah. It's also, like... Yeah, how many leftists were involved in this, like, tomato boycott or whatever? Like, you can be like, oh, they're all the same. They all think this, but, like, it's kind of not really a mainstream position to be a communist or, like, a left-wing person. Like, it is kind of thinking a bit different than everyone else to be on the far left. But I digress. It's
that's what Silicon Valley is about, thinking out loud and being different. That's why we support Marxism-Leninism in the Silicon Valley.
So he hates Gawker. At this point, he's made that clear. But, you know, he can't really do anything about it because...
It's illegal to say someone's gay.
Yeah, especially if they are. Which he is. I don't think we've mentioned that in the episode yet, but he is. He's a gay man.
Yeah, I don't see sexual preferences. I'm a sexual preference blind.
I have a sexual preference blindness. I didn't even notice. I knew that, and it still just
didn't stick.
Filters right out of my head. But his opportunity came along when, in 2012, Gawker posted a 90-second clip of a Hulk Hogan sex tape and then described in detail the rest of the tape and, like, what was happening in it and who was where and what other people were in the room and what Hulk Hogan was doing and, yada, yada. Hulk Hogan didn't like this. He filed lawsuits asking for it to be taken down. They refuse. This ends up becoming a huge legal battle that lasts for years. And in 2016, a jury awards Hulk Hogan $140 million. Immediately after that, two more lawsuits against Gawker, another one from Hogan and one from Shiva, I'm butchering this name, Shiva Ayudari, another rich guy who sued them for challenging his claim that he invented email. Because as far as I can tell, he didn't invent email. He coded one specific kind of email for one specific application. But there had been types of email for decades before that. But he was mad at them for saying he didn't invent email because it was kind of his claim to fame thing. And he also launched a lawsuit from it. And yeah, the huge settlement and all these lawsuits. In August 2016, Gawker shut down operations. They are no more. And it was revealed in Forbes that Peter Thiel has actually been the one funding all these lawsuits. He said, or no, sorry, not Forbes, the New York Times. He said that he had spent about $10 million on lawsuits against Gawker and called it one of the greater philanthropic things I've ever done. And later in an interview with Ryan Holiday, he said, I came to believe that the nastiness on the internet was not a function of technology or various things that might have gone wrong, but the function of one particularly nasty media company led by a particularly sociopathic individual, and that if I defeated Gawker, it would actually change the media landscape. That's why he did it. Not because he was mad that he was outed, but because he believed that all nastiness on the internet was coming from one particularly nasty company, Gawker.
Yeah, and then later went on to help finance the Trump campaign.
Yeah, so, you know, I'm not here to defend posting people's sex tapes. I think what they did to Hulk Hogan is pretty shitty, to be honest.
Some of the particularities of that case. I mean, this is a place where Peter Thiel could have work together with the woke, you know, woke people. We're against revenge porn. Yeah. We're against distributing nude images of people without their consent and stuff. The woke.
Yeah, they would probably call that, you know, sexual harassment, maybe even a type of sexual abuse.
Some people might call it even like rape adjacent.
Yeah, exactly.
Especially given the context that this sex tape was not recorded with Hulk Hogan's consent. He was filmed having sex with his best friend's wife, and they had an open relationship, and it was like there's a fetish element or something. And he said in court that he was feeling so beat up and down since his divorce, where his wife always said, oh, you're too bald, you're too old, I need a younger guy, that he found some peace in being found attractive by his best friend's wife. But it turned out that the room was set up with cameras, and I think it's maybe part of their fetish thing to like have records of their collective sexual achievements. But it was recorded without his consent and somehow got passed on to media without his knowledge of it even existing. So frankly, I'm sympathetic to Hulk Hogan in the sense that he's been done extremely dirty there.
The thing that bugs me about it, though, is that particular rich billionaire should not have the ability to abolish media companies they don't like. Peter Thiel had nothing to do with this lawsuit. The idea that you can just like, you don't like a company, so you find ways to go after them with litigation, sometimes spurious litigation. In this case, it probably wasn't spurious litigation, but still, it's like there's something off about it. Like,
it might have been it might have been kind of spurious in the way that this could have been found legal. Part of their argument was that it wasn't a Hulk Hogan sex tape. It was a Terry Jean Bollea sex tape, which is Hulk Hogan's real name, and that there's a legal distinction between the public figure of Hulk Hogan, the wrestler, and Terry Bollea, who is a private citizen who plays Hulk Hogan on TV. So technically, under U.S. law, as a public figure, the argument that you're allowed to post part of a sex tape is that he's a public figure and it's public interest to be able to scrutinize public figures. So they argued legally that it wasn't actually a Hulk Hogan sex tape. It was a Terry Bollea sex tape. And part of the evidence for it, strangely enough, is they played interviews of Hulk Hogan talking about how big his penis is, saying it was 11 inches long. And his penis in the sex tape was less than 11 inches. And so part of the argument was that, yes, Hulk Hogan, the character, has an 11-inch penis, but Terry Bollea has a 5.5-inch penis. So And so it's proof.
Is that the actual exact length? Are you lying?
I would say
on
around the 11 for sure. 5.5 is just my, I'm a betting man, I'll say.
Right.
The average penis size is about 14 centimeters, according to the best data. So take it, like it or lump it. That's what the data shows. So Hulk Hogan probably had about a 14 centimeter penis. Oh, sorry, Terry Bollea. Hulk Hogan, as he's bragged about on Howard Stern, has an 11 incher, which didn't show up in the tape because it wasn't a tape of Hulk Hogan, the character. He wasn't in character having sex with his best friend's wife.
Yeah.
That was Terry. So it's an interesting legal argument. And I mean, I don't think that leaking sexual images of celebrities is justifiable because they're public figures. And I would be part of a woke movement to prevent, through legislation, institutions like the blog Gawker from posting that kind of imagery and stuff. I think it's morally wrong. And I say that from an extremely woke and multicultural perspective, whether Peter Thiel likes that or not.
Yeah. As far as it being his biggest act of philanthropy, that may be true. It depends what you count as philanthropy. I don't know. I was reading through the philanthropy section on his Wikipedia page just to get a general overview, and there doesn't seem like a lot in there that I would really count as philanthropy. There's his gifts to the Seasteading Institute. I guess that's kind of philanthropy if you think creating a weird libertarian floating lawless city on the sea is philanthropy.
He also, he gave grants to people to drop out of school and start businesses.
Yeah, the Thiel Fellowship annually awards $100,000 to 20 people under the age of 23 in order to spur them to drop out of college and create their own ventures. But I also don't really think of that as philanthropy. Like, that feels like more of like a startup thing to me. I mean, maybe I'm not computing what some people think of as philanthropy. When I think of philanthropy, I think of like, you know, Bill Gates trying to get vaccines to people around the world or developing new vaccines or like, you know, giving to a charity. I think of giving to charity as philanthropy. I found zero evidence of him giving to charities. And to be fair, I didn't look into a ton of detail. Again, I read the Wikipedia thing, but the only one there was he donated $1 million to an appeal fund for the casualties of an earthquake in New Zealand. That was the most philanthropic thing I found on there. The rest was all like investing in AI or life extension research or breakout labs, whatever that is, the seasteading thing, this Thiel Fellowship that invests in different companies. Like, that just seems like venture capital to me. Yes, you're taking a risk by giving $100,000 to these unproven under 23-year-olds to drop out of college.
He doesn't get a return on the Thiel Fellowship. It's zero strings. They don't have to repay it.
Oh, okay, right. So yeah. I guess that's what makes it philanthropy. Yeah. Is that it's,
I mean,
not
it's
a
philanthropy
typical
for young business people, but it's I think it's
it's a weird type of philanthropy. But I guess, yeah, that counts if it's no strings attached. Oh, this one's also pretty philanthropic. He is a supporter. The Thiel Foundation has been a donor to the Committee to Protect Journalists, which promotes the right of journalists to report the news freely without fear of reprisal, which is very funny, given the Gawker story.
That's that interesting. Just read. I mean, yeah, half of one, half dozen of the other. Like, he's reallocating the journalism skill points across the right sector. He's takes with one hand and gives with the other.
Oh, and in the past, he supported two conservative-leaning gay rights orgs. It seemed more like conservative orgs with vaguely gay rights adjacent positions. One of them, I couldn't tell at all what actual gay rights things they supported, other than having a presence at GOP conventions, calling themselves GOP proud or GO proud. But they didn't support gay marriage. This was before gay marriage happened. They were up for leaving that to the states. That was their position. So it was kind of unclear what things they actually supported. But he gave them money. And he also gave money to the American Foundation for Equal Rights, another conservative gay rights org that actually did support marriage equality. Both of those disbanded a few years after they got started. Not a huge market for conservative gay rights orgs.
What about political donations? I mean, that's not exactly philanthropy, but
it's kind of philanthropy.
Supporting our desperate and needy Congress people and senators.
Yeah, so he's been a big donor to campaigns, especially in 2016, 2020, and 2022 midterms. He donated a lot. He gave $1.25 million to Trump's campaign in 2016 and spoke at CPAC that year. After Trump's victory, was named to the executive committee of the transition team and was his advisor on tech issues. So they were very involved at the time. He only gave $250,000 to Trump's reelection campaign in 2020, so already kind of piddling out on that. But he was...
Or moving it into dark money groups.
He was amongst the largest donors to the 2022 midterm Republican races with over $32 million in donations. $15 million of that went to his protege, J.D. Vance's Ohio Senate run via the Protect Ohio Values PAC, and also the Saving Arizona PAC to support Blake Masters, another right-wing weirdo who I think is involved at the Thiel Foundation and who also opposes gay marriage, wants to roll that back. So he gave him millions of dollars.
Yeah, he gave J.D. Vance an advance of the Senate run. J.D. Vance was given a job at one of his organizations, and his coworkers have said that J.D. Vance basically never came into the office. He was just like given a salary by as part of
being a mentee and protege of Thiel. Interestingly, for this campaign, this ongoing campaign, in November 2023, Thiel said that the Trump administration was crazier than I thought and more dangerous than I thought. They couldn't get the most basic pieces of government to work. And then he said that Trump had called him asking for $10 million, but he turned him down, and later heard that Trump had insulted him to Blake Masters, saying that he was a fucking scumbag.
Broken clock.
Nevertheless, Thiel said, there's still a chance I might change my mind. This was November 2023. And then in July 2024, Trump named J.D. Vance as his running mate.
Even though J.D. Vance had said that Trump might be the Republicans' Hitler in private messages and had been a strong anti-Trumper.
Yeah, early on was an anti-Trumper. But now...
And is unlikable. And his favorability ratings are... I don't know if you guys know the details on this, but he's got like a -9 favorability rating, which is usually vice presidential candidates are supposed to not do damage. Like that's the common logic in vice presidential candidates is like,
yeah, you pick someone unoffensive, maybe even good, but you know, it doesn't really matter.
Maybe fills in for some of your gaps, but generally you're not getting a boost from it. You're just risking being dragged down by it. But Donald Trump Jr. was apparently one of the big internal lobbyists for hiring J.D. Vance for the connections to the Silicon Valley tech industry. And Musk shortly after announced that he's giving $45 million a month through this PAC and stuff. And
I think he walked that back, that he was going to give that much. But yeah, he did launch a PAC. He's given money. He created a voter registration website or something that...
Being investigated for being potentially illegal because it doesn't... give you voting information, or doesn't actually register you to vote or something like that.
Yeah, or it was like biased towards Republicans in some way. I don't know. I don't have the details of this. But yeah, well, there's still no evidence that Thiel has donated to Trump's 2024 campaign. But hey, J.D. Vance has only been the VP pick for a few weeks at this point. I assume it's coming.
This is kind of a pet theory, but I suspect, like the Gawker thing, it's going to come out that Thiel helped invest in the buyout of Twitter. It's just so aligned with his kind of shit.
Right.
And
yeah, he invested in Rumble. He's a big investor in Rumble. He's part of the reason that it's around, that it exists and kind of works. I don't know if many people on here have watched a lot of stuff on Rumble. I've forayed into it, and it's a horrible, shitty website, but it is better than some of the other right-wing videos streaming sites like what's the other one?
BitLocker
or I don't know, BitChute. That's the one that I was thinking of. You know, Rumble kind of works, and I think the reason it kind of works is because of that Thiel cash infusion. Other random fact, he was also an early supporter of James O'Keefe in 2009.
The Project Veritas guy?
Project Veritas guy, yeah.
Right.
Before James O'Keefe hit it big with Project Veritas, he produced a video where he put a logo on a van that said Taxpayers Clearinghouse. Apparently at the time, there was a big van labeled Publishers Clearinghouse that would go around giving oversized checks to people. So this was like a play on that. So he drove around to some poor, mostly like racialized neighborhoods, and then surprised people with a giant check. And they were like, oh my God, I'm going to get a bunch of money. And then he's like, no, it's actually a $300 billion check made out to Citibank from Obama. And you're not getting any money. What I'm actually presenting you with is a fake invoice, a quote unquote, an invoice for $28K, because that's your share of the bank bailout that Obama did. This was his little trick that he was playing on people that was so clever.
He would make people think that they were going to get money, and then he'd reveal that Obama stole it all.
Yeah, exactly.
I was going to give you money, but Obama stole it all. Sorry.
So this video, you know, compared to the hits O'Keefe would later get with his undercover Planned Parenthood videos and so, it wasn't that big, but it was an early...
I can't remember when we talked about the details of how he lies in those videos and stuff, but you can find it somewhere in our archive where we pick apart some of the false shit that he's put forward on the Project Veritas platform.
I think it was in the Trump election episodes. But yeah, if you go to Timba and Toast on YouTube, there's a really great rundown of a lot of their lies. There's like a two-video long thing. But yeah, according to the Village Voice, O'Keefe told a friend that he had approached Thiel with the idea for the video and had walked away with a $30,000 check to produce it, although Thiel's spokesperson said that the number was closer to $10K. So just, you know, not a lot of money, but, you know, he's there. He's like giving a bit to Rumble here. He's helping to launch James O'Keefe's career over there. He's behind a lot of these little things going on. We now go to Peter Thiel answering a question from Joe Rogan about climate change.
You don't feel that climate science is a real science? There's several different things one could say. It's possible climate change is happening. We don't have great accounts of why that's going on. So I'm not questioning any of those things, but how scientific it is, maybe the climate is increasing because of carbon dioxide emissions, temperatures are going up. Maybe it's methane. Maybe it's people are eating too much steak, and you have to measure how much is methane a greenhouse gas versus carbon dioxide. I don't think they're rigorously doing that stuff scientifically. And I think the fact that it's called climate science tells you that it's more dogmatic than anything that's truly science should be.
And that was Peter Thiel, completely stunlocked for a full 20 seconds before going on to lie about whether we've scientifically measured the relative climate effects of carbon and methane, and then claiming that we know climate science is dogmatic because we call it climate science. And now back to our show.
Something that I was reminded of earlier, so I saw this video of Peter Thiel. Peter Thiel believes that wokeness, DEI, and the idea of anti-racism may genuinely be a Chinese plot to disrupt America. Mm-hmm. And he believes that Bill Gates and his advocacy for different things, including vaccinations, could either be a... He's kind of making a point like it doesn't matter whether they're an agent or an asset. Bill Gates is being used by China. He might be an agent of China. He might be an asset of China. But he's advancing China's agenda by promoting wokeness and vaccinations.
What interest does China have in wokeness and vaccination? I don't know if you didn't get this detail, I don't get it.
He said Gates... vaccine policy proposal or whatever is identical to the Chinese Communist Party's vaccination proposals and ideas. I don't think that's actually literally true. I don't even know if he believes that what he's saying, or if he's saying something that he thinks is going to be good for the audience of this particular podcast to hear and attribute to him. But yeah, no, it's kind of weird. I found it that's getting into like... I said I was surprised that he wasn't as much of a tech dipshit as I thought, but that is a extreme like tech doofus kind of like to think that wokeness could be a Chinese plot, I think is pretty absurd. And why would wokeness benefit the Chinese government? I guess you could say that it prevents people from being racist to China, which might be, in Peter Thiel's imagination, a geopolitical advantageous position for the West, is for people to be racist to the Chinese.
I guess,
yeah. Or there's deeper machinations, or he doesn't genuinely think it. But that might be giving him too much credit, because he does... In the diversity myth book, he does believe some like weirdo non sequitur shit like that.
Yeah, I heard him say in one thing that he was talking about his formative political beliefs and the Reagan administration and a few different things. But he said at one point, what does the millionaire, the general, and the priest have in common? They're all anti-communist. They have a common enemy. And he goes on to say that anti-communism was a formative political belief for him as a teenager. So I can believe that he has some weird ideas about China and communism. And what it's a through line through all of his stuff.
Yeah.
The opening line of that 2009 Cato Unbound essay is, I remain committed to the faith of my teenage years, to authentic human freedom as a precondition for the highest good. I stand against confiscatory taxes, totalitarian collectives, and the ideology of the inevitability of death for every individual. For all these reasons, I call myself a libertarian. So he's, yeah, just saying I still believe the same things I believed as a teenager. The reason I'm a libertarian is because I'm against collectivism and taxes and death, I guess. I don't know what that has to do with libertarianism. Abolishing death would be pretty cool, like, or at least radical life extension. I'm down for that. Although he probably only wants it for rich people, which is horrible. But speaking of death.
Yeah,
this ham-fisted.
I just want to express some complexity here before we talk about this, but I think it's important. I do like to respect people's privacy, and there's part of me, there's variation in how we can interpret the event we're about to talk about. And in one interpretation, like, I don't want to be some smug, bullying podcast leftist talking about one of the worst things that's ever happened to Peter Thiel in his life, joking about it, and...
accusing him of things that maybe he didn't do.
Yes. But that being said, Peter Thiel's set up a technology network which is surveilling the human population of Earth. He's been involved in some of the most virulent, damaging politics of my lifetime. And he doesn't respect the privacy of others. And I think it's genuinely possible that Peter Thiel murdered his side piece and got away with it. If his side piece happened to die in a way that was tragic for him personally, that's my hesitation in talking about this. I feel bad to say, oh, like, imagine someone, it's like Patton Oswalt's wife dies and there's like this internet meme that he killed her.
Right.
And I can't think of anything more disgusting, really.
Yeah.
Like, what a thing to go through, that not only do you lose the closest person to you, it's the most damaging thing, but then that people are gonna, based on some weird political shit, they're gonna say that he killed her. Twisted, disgusting. It makes me sick to my stomach to contemplate doing that to someone. But in this case, anyways, I want to register that as we get into this thing. So there's an Intercept article, right?
Yeah, there's an Intercept article. And to be clear, the Intercept article does not allege that Thiel killed his ex-lover. I'm not alleging that. But there are some facts around it that are just kind of weird. So I think they met in early 2020, early in the pandemic is when they started seeing each other, I guess. Yeah, side piece is a good way to put it.
So they call him his kept lover,
yeah,
or something
he,
like
he
that?
He described his relationship with him as being kept. He said, quote, it's not like I was his boyfriend, really. I was just kind of his friend that was there for him whenever he needed, you know, whatever he needed. And he also said, if I'm going to give up the relationships I have and give up my dreams right now during COVID or dating other guys or pursuing people, then I'm going to get a $300,000 car and I'm going to get a $13 million home. Those are some of the things that I see fit for me to give up my freedom. That's a very weird quote. Like, because I can imagine being someone's side piece And even them giving you like a nice car, they're a billionaire, right? They can buy you a nice house, a nice car, whatever, or at least let you live in a nice house. I don't know if he gave it to him, but he let him live in it. But like, why does any of that mean that you have to give up the relationships you have and your dreams right now, or dating other guys? Like, Peter Thiel has a husband. He's been married since 2017. His husband is a portfolio manager for the Thiel Fellowship, I think. Whatever. He's not a very public guy. I don't know much about his husband as far as I know, but they're married. They're still married. They were married the whole time this was happening. And, you know, some people have open relationships. Totally fine.
Like Hulk Hogan's best friend and his
wife. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Sometimes you are totally fine with your husband fucking other people. That's fine. But like, if you have a husband, why can't your side piece pursue other relationships? Or like, why do they have to give up their dreams? And it's just kind of, it's kind of weird. His lover also said, I don't side with him on a lot of political things, but I do understand him. I'm trying to influence him in ways, to show him my heart, to show him how it affects myself and certain individuals, about his donations to the Trump campaign in the midterm elections. You know, he's hanging out with a bunch of gay people. They're probably like, what the fuck, man? Like, why are you giving all this money to Blake Masters and J.D. Vance and all these anti-gay freaks and Donald Trump? They too had a lot of gay pool parties together, by all accounts. So this is some of the things they did together, I guess. Leaked texts from a University of California grad student who Thiel randomly reached out to on Facebook show Thiel saying, yeah, we know how to have a lot of no holds barred gay fun, when he was inviting him to one of these pool parties at his side piece's house. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's the kind of thing they were getting up to. In late 2022, I keep calling him a side piece. His name is Jeff Thomas. In late 2022, Thomas said he was planning on leaving. I don't think it's very satisfying, to be honest, to be kept. I saw the spark in me fade away, and it was toxic, and it was unhealthy. And I've had multiple talks with myself this year about getting out of it. And I've actually discussed to him about it. Like, I can't do this anymore. My mental health is at risk. So again, weird things to say. Like, if someone was just giving you a bunch of money to, like, I get the vibe from this that there was some like weird interpersonal abuse. This is, it wasn't specifically alleged, but like, the spark in you is fading away because of this toxic, unhealthy relationship. And like, just knowing some of this other stuff about Thiel, like, it seems fucked up. Like, it seems like there was some weird fucked up shit going on in this relationship.
Yeah. I mean, this is a weird situation you're describing. Someone, a billionaire, has a partially willing second lover that he has pool parties with and stuff, and that he pays off, who is publicly musing about how they're losing their spark and they feel alone, they need to leave, that they can't follow their dreams, they can't have other boyfriends.
Yeah.
Like, Peter Thiel has other boyfriends or other relationships.
Yeah.
So that, even just that, like, I mean, and this is a place where Thiel is going to be definitely breaking with the woke community, because woke people would say, oh, well, you can't have multiple partners and then enforce boundaries on their lives, right, that they don't want because you're more powerful than them. That right. goes against the modern woke doctrine. And I co-sign that. Definitely. I don't think that's right.
No, yeah, no.
I'm absolutely all in favor of no holds bar gay fun. I'm all in favor of open relationships, romantic and sexual pluralism within individuals' lives, freely consenting adults and so on, gay pool parties. Great.
But little being no holds barred gay fun? Yeah, why not?
Yeah, I mean, I would hold some bars personally.
Oh, yeah, well, yeah. Depending what you mean by no holds barred, there's definitely some bars that should be held. That's true. But so sometime after that statement in 2022, he did move out of Thiel's house and got his own apartment. Though they did keep in touch after that. They still attended events together. They were still in contact, but he was making moves to get out of the Thiel orbit. And then in 2023, Thomas fell from the balcony of his new apartment, fell to his death. There were witnesses on the scene who claimed to see him jump, although many people in his life didn't believe that he was suicidal. His agent speculated that maybe he fell while taking a selfie because it seemed so unbelievable that he would have killed himself. His cousin told the Daily Mail this was not a suicide. To report otherwise is a complete disregard to his character and who he was. And a longtime friend said, I know what everyone who has experienced this says, but he did not seem like he was thinking of killing himself. He had just RSVP'd to my baby shower and said how excited he was to be there. Now, to be clear, there were other family members who posted statements about, you know, suicide being a horrible thing, and it was ruled a suicide by the investigators, or investigated as a suicide. I don't know if there was ever any evidence one way or the other about what had happened, other than the reports of witnesses claiming he jumped. But It's kind of weird.
It's kind of a trope, not from media, but from real life, of people dying under mysterious circumstances connected to a wealthy and well-connected person and have it be ruled a suicide and never getting a real investigation.
Well, and especially like people who had been saying things in the media, like kind of revealing personal, like some of those statements I just read. I can't imagine Peter Thiel was happy that his partner was talking about him in that way, like the spark's going out of me because of this and I'm his kept guy and like this kind of stuff. Like, I can't imagine Thiel liked that. And yeah, I don't know.
Vindictive, like, privacy obsessed billionaire having dirty laundry aired in public.
Exactly. Yeah. And like, if this was any other person, I'd be like, okay, it's just conspiracy theorizing. But if anyone could do this and pull it off and make it look like a suicide, if anyone could do it, it would be a billionaire. Like, they have the resources. If like, anyone he's else, possible.
If anyone else who wasn't an extremely rich and well-connected person this happened to, I'd be more likely to not side-eye this. But there is something, like, and we touched on this in the last episode. Structurally, there's a type of rich that you can get that's so rich where law and society bends around you. Like, for example, Eric Prince, the founder of Blackwater, he's alleged to have killed someone in, I believe, his house in Qatar. I believe it was Qatar. Maybe it's the UAE. But anyways, Eric Prince has a house in a rich Middle Eastern country, and it's alleged that he killed someone and buried that person in his backyard. This has been a public allegation for like 10 years or something. I first heard about this.
Right.
And as far as I know, it's never been like seriously investigated by people who are looking for justice from the local authorities and so on. And this is an issue with income inequality itself. It's a structural issue with the system, which is that some people are so rich that they can very easily scare people into silence. They can bribe people. They can bribe people in organizations, police departments.
Yeah.
And it doesn't even need to be an explicit, like, I'm going to give you money and you're going to find me innocent kind of thing. It's like, hey, we're friends. I donate to the police department all the time. You know, I'm like, the writing is on the wall that if you chase this, where this goes, it's going to be not beneficial to you, or you're going to put yourself at risk. I mean, and people are afraid of Peter Thiel.
Yeah.
It's people who are close to Peter Thiel are afraid of Peter Thiel. So, yeah. I'm going to fall short of making an explicit accusation about something that I don't have any firsthand experience with and so on. But it's a pretty weird story that you just shared with us about.
Yeah, the structure of billionaires in society makes it impossible for us to rule it out in this case. But I also want to say that, like, even if it's true that he committed suicide, a lot of these statements he was making in public leading up to his death was relating to his own deteriorating mental health, relating to his relationship with Peter Thiel. So even if it was a suicide, the way he was being kind of used and abused by Peter Thiel seems to have been playing some role in that deteriorating mental health. That, like, you know, you can never, like, blame someone's suicide on just, like, one other person doing something, or maybe there are some cases where you could, but like it's a complicated thing. But I think at the very least, when someone's been abused for years, as seems to be the case with this person, that some of the blame for them taking their own life, if that is what happened, would lie with the abuser.
Yeah, and Peter Thiel, if you're listening to this, I just want to let you know, before you try to get revenge on us, the Chapo Trap House guys told us to say this.
Yeah, and we just can't say bigger fish than
we can't,
us.
We can't say no to them.
Yeah. I mean, thankfully, Peter Thiel will probably never hear this. Unless he, like, employs people to scour even the lower mid-range of popular leftist podcasts and then tell them if anyone says anything, which I don't rule out. He probably wouldn't even have to pay them that much. They'd just have to, like, do a search and some of this weird
people software. Listen to our show for free. It's pretty good.
Yeah, but I don't know if they're the same people that he would pay to... I assume all of our listeners got our back in terms of not squealing on us to Peter Thiel directly, mm-hmm. but
no snitch tagging.
Yeah. I don't know. It's if there wasn't all those other details about like just the weird statements being made by his partner beforehand and his partner or his side partner had just died, I would have been like, nah, this is just tabloid stuff. I don't want to talk about this, but when you read the whole story, it's just like, yeah, there's something weird about it. So that's Peter Thiel. That's everything I know about Peter Thiel, mostly.
Oh, is he a vampire?
Oh, I forgot about that one. Right.
It's, you know, he's got such a long resume. We forgot that he might be a vampire.
It's because that was early in my notes and we skipped it and I forgot to go back to it. In an interview with Inc. magazine, Thiel said, "I am looking into parabiosis stuff, where they inject the young blood into older mice, and they found it had a massive rejuvenating effect. I think that there are a lot of these things that have been strangely underexplored." The author of the article said, "I followed up by asking if he meant parabiosis was really interesting as a business opportunity or as a personal health treatment. And he made it very clear that he was talking about the latter." So personal health treatment. That was the early on about it. Then
I hate it when my comments about young blood are taken out of context.
and just before Gawker closed forever. This was after they'd already lost the lawsuit to Hulk Hogan, after all this was even public that Thiel hated. They got one last parting shot in Peter Thiel, reporting on an anonymous tip that they'd received that Thiel spends about $40,000 per quarter to get an infusion of blood from an 18-year-old. This was an anonymous tip they got. We don't know where it came from. Don't know if it's true, but someone said it was true, and Gawker reported on it. $40,000 a quarter.
Jeez,
that's American too. Guess it's nothing for Peter Thiel, but damn, if only I was still 18 years old and had blood,
I might get your $160,000 a year.
Yeah,
go be a kept boy.
I don't know about all that, but I mean, if it was just, I guess it depends how many transfusions I'd be expected to give, like once a week, once a month, but who knows.
Yeah, you got to have a whole gaggle of them. I wonder if he was tapping his little friend for blood.
I think his friend was in his 20s or 30s though already by that time, the one who died. So probably his blood was too old by then. You want some of that fresh 18-year-old blood.
I mean, why stop there?
Speaking at a 2018 conference, Thiel denied these rumors, saying, quote, "I want to publicly tell you that I'm not a vampire. On the record, I am not a vampire." And then when people asked for clarification on whether he injects the blood of young people, since that doesn't technically answer the question, he did specifically deny that, saying that he does not inject the blood of the young into his old veins.
Well, that puts my concerns to rest. Anyone who comes out and publicly says, "I'm not a vampire," is almost certainly not a vampire, because why would you lie?
Yeah. Why would a vampire lie about that? They would have no reason to.
By the way, I'm not a vampire. May I come into your house?
I'm just very polite. I would never enter, even though I could physically.
I could, of course.
But I wouldn't, unless you invite me in.
And I'm just so anti-narcissism, I never look in the mirror. Of course, I could,
but if I am to come in, I would need you to cover them all.
Please cover
sheets.
All the mirrors, yes, because I can't stand to have that narcissism of even seeing my own reflection for one moment. So unlike the other thing, I actually am going to accuse him here. This guy's a vampire. This guy's like a real...
No, yeah, like I obviously, I don't know, but like, a rich guy like that, he's into life extension stuff. He donated to a bunch of it. He said in that 2009 article that he wants to defeat death. He's signed up to have himself cryogenically frozen after death, even though he doesn't think it will work. Why not spend a whole bunch of fucking money on that just in case, is his point of view. I think he did. I don't know. I just, if I had to guess, if I was a betting man and someone was making a bet and they knew the answer. And
He clearly believes that it's okay to lie for his own right to privacy, but also that his businesses feel it's okay to lie. Palantir feels it's okay to lie about how their data is used by border enforcement. He was asked in an interview about his private life, and he kind of like awkwardly stuttered, saying, oh, it's completely normal. And then it turns out that no, I mean, not that, you know, no holds barred gay pool parties aren't normal in like a normative sense, but he was certainly obscuring his personal life from the public because he believed that he had a right to. And I think you do have a limited right to do that. No holds barred gay pool parties. I think you don't have a responsibility to report to the media if you're asked.
But yeah, no, if his partner wasn't saying cryptic things that hinted at him being abusive to him, I would have been like, there's no reason at all to report on his side piece or his, you know, like, it's the weird abusive stuff that I think you lose some of that right to privacy.
Yeah, and there's an incredible power difference there when you're talking about a multi-billionaire and like a 25-year-old model.
Social media influencer model.
So then to have that model sort of say, oh, my spark is fading, I'm having mental health issues, I'm not allowed to follow my dreams or have other boyfriends, I think I need to get out of this situation. And then to die in mysterious circumstances where the people around him say, oh, he would never kill himself, maybe he was taking a selfie and he fell down, even though there's no evidence to that effect at all.
Yeah.
And so with apologies to Mr. Thiel, this is one of the ways that the rich are dehumanized by income inequality, which is, we cannot trust you when you say that you did not murder that person, when you say that you are not a blood transfusion receiving vampire. You are just simply too rich to trust on these matters, and that's not a personal statement.
I wonder if the blood transfusions are what made him so gaunt and weird looking.
Yeah, actually, I mean, let's just go for it. He's a weird, he's got some evil to him.
Because look at this picture. When you Google Peter Thiel, I know nobody can see this, but this one right here, when he's younger,
he looks normal.
He looks like a normal guy.
And then older Peter Thiel.
And then there's this. Like what?
He looks like an animatronic that's been abandoned for 15 years.
Or kind of like a vampire. Like, you know, vampires, depending on the movie, is very different. But I could see that as a type of vampire makeup, that sort of pallid complexion that's like a little. I've also heard allegations that it was due to colloidal silver ingestion that made his skin slightly blue.
Yeah, he looks like a Disney Plus miniseries like called Young Emperor.
Is that a real thing, or you just, made just
making
this up?
This up? But yeah, right, you know, right. Like the Emperor from Star Wars.
Star Wars. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of creepy. We now go deep into the catacombs beneath the Thiel estate, where Peter Thiel is sitting in his lair, enjoying the daily news.
Oh, they put in the newspaper that I'm a vampire. That's slanderous. It's a violation of my privacy, and it's totally untrue.
Mr. Thiel?
Yes, Jenkins. Good to see you.
Would now be a good time for your afternoon young blood, Mr. Thiel, sir, or would you like that in a few more minutes?
No, bring it in. It always calms me down.
Absolutely, Mr. Thiel. Here, I'll just bring it in, this nice frothing goblet. It's freshly extracted, of course, within the last 5 minutes. Just how you like it, sir.
And I'll just put in my sippy straw and... Disgusting. Oh. Check that blood boy's ID. Something doesn't taste right.
No, sir, sure. Let me, Oh, my God. I'm so sorry, sir. His birthday was today. He's been 19 for 7 hours now.
Ugh. It's disgusting. I can completely taste that.
I'm so sorry, sir. We'll get you some fresh 18-year-old blood.
Yeah, dispose of him and find someone else.
Of course, sir. I should have checked it every day. It's stupid, stupid, stupid.
All right, leave me alone.
And that was totally not a vampire, Peter Thiel, exercising discretion as to his consumption of young blood. So yeah, that's Peter Thiel. Not a great guy.
And a strangely influential person. You know, there are richer people who are less influential than him.
Yeah, he only has about $4 to $8 billion that we know of.
Yeah, his biographer said that he's very likely better at hiding his wealth than the average billionaire.
So yeah, he might have more than that, but he's definitely doesn't seem to be in the Musk 100 billionaire, Jeff Bezos 100 billionaire level of some of those other billionaires. So he obviously doesn't work as hard as them, but you know, having $8 billion even gives you basically carte blanche to do whatever you want. Like, it's just zeros at that point. Like, you can give as much as you want to political campaigns. You can cover up what you need to cover up. You can start whatever company you need to start. You know, he wouldn't have had enough money to buy Twitter all on his own like Musk did, but he probably could have got the money together from some of his cronies.
A classmate of his at Stanford told his biographer, his unauthorized biographer, The Contrarian. It's a fairly critical biography. And again, I read a chapter here, control F there kind of thing. Just for full disclosure, don't get the impression that I'm reading 10 or 15 books every episode we do. Although I would love that misconception to flourish. In that book, he quotes a classmate. At Stanford, Peter Thiel viewed liberals through the lens as people who were not nice to him. The way people treated him had a huge impact, and that's still with him today. And before you say, hey, wrong boys, you were mean to Peter Thiel just now. Well, he started it. He's been surveilling me.
Yeah, no, true. He collected images of my face, I'm pretty sure, because they did collect images from Facebook. My pictures on Facebook were public for a very long time. I think some still are, maybe one or two. At the time when Clearview AI was launching, I'm pretty sure there's tons of pictures of me from Facebook on there. So, yeah, he got up in my shit first.
Yeah, so we're allowed to say that he looks a little bit like an animatronic that has been abandoned for 15 years and it started sagging around the eyes and the face.
Yeah, he's a freak. But that's all the time we have this week, folks. Thank you for listening.
Another billionaire.
Thanks for listening to the show.
And if you're a millionaire or a billionaire, please subscribe to our Patreon. You can get bonus episodes. You can get the whole archive. You can get access to our Discord, private Facebook group, and more. But especially those sweet, sweet bonus episodes. And actually, you don't even have to be a millionaire or a billionaire to do it because it's such an affordable rate. Only $6 American per month to get unlimited access. This isn't the limited access, of some other podcasting providers. No, it's unlimited access as long as you're subscribed. But you know, it helps us do the show. We enjoy doing the show, talking about stuff like this and others. So please do, if you haven't already, sign up on Patreon. Thank you all for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.
Seriously?
You guys are stupid.
Seriously?
Wrong. Seriously. Wrong.
Seriously.
Wrong.
Seriously.
Are they wrong?
I think they're wrong 100%.
Sometimes they're wrong. Sometimes they're wrong.
Seriously?
They're always wrong.
That is absolute
wrong.
Seriously?
It's so wrong. Wrong. Very nice words, but happens to be wrong. Wrong. Wrong.
Seriously?
Seriously?
Wrong.
Seriously?
Wrong.
Seriously?
Wrong.
Seriously?
Wrong.
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 We have one more question.
Seriously?
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 Wrong.